Welcome to the Marketing Growth Podcast. I'm your host, Shane Barker. I've been chatting with Francis B., the founder and managing director of 11 International. In the last episode, we discussed cross-cultural marketing. His agency specializes in it, so let's find out more about what kind of work they do. Well, that's crazy. So when we talk about, like, I want to talk a little bit about, like, the strategies and, like, the different things you guys do. So we talk about strategies, like, what are some of the strategies you guys use to improve, like, your clients' digital communication, right? Because that's obviously what you're doing here is you're trying to communicate a message you guys put together for your client in certain areas of the world. And then what are some of the things, what are the strategies that you guys use, like, when you come with that messaging?
Yeah, so actually this is one of the things that we tend to spend a lot of time on and educating our clients because it is quite different for them. You know, for instance, when we're doing like PR, they come from the point of view of, oh, you know, you can just write whatever you want and then just ship it off to the journalists and they'll just cover it. Or they'll just, you know, copy and paste what you do. And that can be applicable actually in the China market, but obviously in the States, you know, you come from a very different point of view of, you know, as a journalist, ex-journalist or a blogger as myself, you know, you want the best stories. Obviously that kind of also, helps your personal career as well.
Sure.
But, yeah, so, I mean, like for us, we do spend quite a bit of time because you get companies, the ones that we've worked with, a lot of them are in like AI, robotics, and blockchain. And we get companies that are, you know, apps as well. And, you know, a lot of them, frankly speaking, at the end of the day, they kind of have, when they approach you, they kind of have a very similar story. They're like, oh, you know, we have the best technology. And then, you know, they throw a bunch of, you know, jargon at you saying, yeah. Oh, because of this, like, for instance, we have the best SLAM algorithm. We use federated learning in a way that no one else has. But like at the end of the day, when you listen to that, it's like, you know, what's the value that you get out of that as a normal person, like the end user, right? Because people usually are quite scared of things that they don't know or they fear. Yeah. And even the journalists themselves, you know, obviously they're coming in with an objective point of view. But at the same time, you know, actually most of the time you have to kind of educate the journalists as well to the details. And so sort of where we come in is that we try to distill that information by focusing on sort of some specific details that we believe will actually be applicable to the journalists, whether it's applicable to society, because ultimately they're looking to communicate a message or, you know, in their writing to end users, which is, you know, normal people like you and I. I mean, like, we essentially at the end of the day help them by sort of thinking about this approach like a Trojan horse. And the reason I say that is oftentimes right now, you know, even if you have all this technology, frankly speaking, you know, the things that the CEO thinks are really exciting, a lot of the times we find isn't as exciting as they think it is. And so, you know, we try to kind of approach this from a more human level. So, you know, I just kind of pointed out, how does this help society as a question, like that question. That is actually a legitimate question that I ask a lot of our clients, because they need to think of this not from an pure engineering point of view. You know, even if you have great teams, how do you really defend that? Are you backed by, you know, like the BATs, which is the Baidu, Ali, Tencent, or are you backed by the FANG, like Facebook, what is it? Facebook, Amazon, Google, etc. Mm-hmm. You know, are you backed by like major VCs, you know, like A16Z, you know, what's your background like, you know, because like when especially like with blockchain companies, for example, they always talk about how amazing their team is. 100% of the companies that we talk to in the blockchain space, they always bring up their team as the first thing. But if you're listening to that as a journalist, you're thinking, so what?
Who cares? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like you hear they get, you know, dozens or hundreds of emails a day from blockchain companies saying exactly the same thing. Is anybody going to really That's the problem that you have to solve. And you can't pay your way out of that in many cases. So we really try to help craft and hone that message and distill that message, because I always tell my clients, no matter how good of a friend you are with the journalist, I do have some great friends who are journalists as well at some major publications, but you know, there are plenty of times where they don't think it's relevant to them. They just tell me straight up. And then they, you know, tell me, unfortunately, you know, for XYZ reasons, it's not the best fit for me. You know, just because I'm friends with them doesn't guarantee that they'll sort of get that story that they want.
Yeah, they've got to put their name on it. That makes sense. I think that's the thing, is that even though you have, you know, friends that are journalists, they have to put their name on it. And so if they have to put their name on it, it's got to be something that's good, right? Whether you're friends or not. So that makes sense. So what are some of like the most common mistakes that you see brands making when it comes to strategic communication? I mean, there's some things that you say, man, this seems to happen all the time. Like, other than blockchain companies saying they have the best team in the world.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, you know, kind of going back to the Trojan, like the Trojan horse example, you know, they want to talk about a lot of different technologies that they're able to offer, but you know, how does it affect me? Like, you know, if you're doing, for example, federated learning is sort of the ability to be able to do an analysis on data sets that actually you're not able to actually see. So it's sort of like what I call blind data per se. There's a way where you can actually submit data where the central location isn't actually able to see exactly what that data is. Maybe it has to do with people's, you know, like private data, for example. Obviously, you don't want that to be revealed to random parties, even if they're a potential partner, right? But, you know, technology like that, you know, if you just say things like federated learning, people are just like, what? and so you have to kind of make sure that it's applied directly to the end user in a way that they can understand. And actually, to be honest, that is a major mistake that I often see, because they always want to talk about, I can do X, Y, Z. In reality, like, you know, bringing up that Trojan horse example, it actually just takes, you know, maybe X in a way that's applicable to the, you know, end user or things that are happening in society today. And you can always, you know, get your foot in the door with the journalist. And when you have the interview with the journalist, you can always, you know, kind of unload the rest of the things that your heart desires to talk about.
Yeah. Make it applicable to certain things that are going on that the common person can chew on and understand.
Yeah, I mean, it's to be honest, it's easier said than done, though. I mean, it seems a bit basic, but like when you actually ask those questions, you end up seeing the CEOs kind of like just sit there and think about, you know, really, how is this really, you know, helping people? Because a lot of them, especially sort of like more of the engineering background CEOs, they tend to just want to solve a problem. And that problem is not necessarily a societal problem. It's just their personal intrigue in solving a really hard technical problem. And that's actually really, really cool.
Yeah, I could understand that, because, you know, engineers and they think a certain way, right? And it becomes a little more difficult for them to understand. It's like, listen, I think there's this big problem. We have this solution. Why wouldn't everybody want to hear about it? It's like, well, but maybe people don't understand there's that problem, right? Or maybe they don't understand exactly what that problem is. You get it because you've developed it and you're in the middle of it. So it's difficult. And I think that's where an agency like yourself comes in, and that's where it's helpful, right? For them to better put a different set of lenses on it, or have you guys come in from a different angle and say, listen, I get what you're trying to say, but the public doesn't care, right? We got to figure out how to spin this thing and make it so that I have a journalist that goes, oh, that's interesting, because it ties into this current event that's happening, right? And then that's the foot in the door. And then you can talk about some of the other fun features and other great stuff that you have going on. But like, how do we get in the door? Because once again, as you pointed out, I mean, journalists get how many emails on a daily basis? I mean, how many emails did you get on a daily, weekly basis of just people pitching you all the time?
I'd say about 50. You know, I'm sure like New York Times and stuff like that get 100, maybe 200, 300.
Think so, about I mean, that. Like, yeah. You got to be good. You got to come in with something hot. You can't come in with something stupid.
Exactly. I mean, so, like, you know, I've had companies want to, you know, talk about their product. You know, like, for example, a company that I just talked to recently, they want to launch a battery pack or a battery charger, and it's wireless, and they think it's the next best thing since sliced bread. And, you know, it's just a charger. at the same time, nobody has actually heard of the company because they haven't even put any effort into sort of building their corporate brand as well. And so they're thinking, and also, you know, their Kickstarter itself didn't raise a whole ton, even though the company itself is actually rather large. It's well known with locally, but it, you know, it's kind of a ghost outside of, of China.
Local.
So I mean, like, you know, and having these conversations, they're like, oh, you know, this is an amazing product. And I'm just thinking, you know, it's a battery charger.
Nothing too sexy about that, right? You're like, hey, I got this battery charger. And they're like, this is what you're pitching is a battery charger?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, and then they're like, oh, you know, we want this in, like, you know, the New York Times, or like, you know, we want this in like CNET and publications, right? But problem is they have to kind of understand the step-by-step process in being able to distill that message in a way that's resonates, and just going off by saying, oh, we have this great battery charger, isn't going to do it.
Yeah, you know, our approach is sexy enough to make
an impression for the journalists. And, you know, one of the things that they have going, you know, they do have some great things going for them actually. But those are a bit more on the corporate side. So there's ways to kind of integrate both sort of the product and the corporate. And this is actually even stuff that we did for Castbox as well. So, like, for example, we launched their product in conjunction with their fundraising and also the founder story, and kind of going back to how we positioned the CEO as sort of, you know, coming from not much per se to where she is now. So yeah, those are sort of a lot of the elements that we've implemented and be able to make sure that, you know, you get this, like, you know, really great message in the beginning that makes an impact and, you know, does get quite a decent amount of coverage, and that will help kind of propel things in the future. But then if you're kind of starting off on a crutch, you're always going to be on a crutch.
Yeah, no, I hear you. So who is your, I mean, when we talk about client success and the things that you guys have done, obviously you have Castbox, sounds like a huge success. Do you guys, anybody else you guys have worked with that's been a big client that you guys phenomenal success with?
Yeah, one of the clients, I think right now, there's a few actually. So there's one called Kobo Wallet. They're one of the most popular wallets in sort of the crypto space. It's kind of boring actually, but in addition to that, we've worked with a company called ForwardX. They were actually a suitcase that would follow you around. They weren't the first, but we had to do quite a bit of repositioning and rethinking how that product works and how it's kind of useful at the time it was launched. And then actually the most popular, I think, in recently for us has been Nreal. So Nreal is their augmented reality glasses, or actually I should call it magic mixed reality glasses, similar to what you might find from Magic Leap or Microsoft HoloLens. We've been working with them for almost 2 years. So initially when, we also had to do quite a bit of work with them in helping them to kind of understand what value the product offers, because originally, you know, the executives wanted to kind of keep it open-ended so that it's not necessarily consumer-facing mixed reality glasses, and kind of keep the doors open for potential business opportunities, meaning sort of on the enterprise side. But, you know, when we're looking at the form factor for that device, it's very compact. It looks like sunglasses as well. And, you know, we realized that we could try to really hone in and craft that message and sell sort of that more consumer facing story, because at the end of the day, the enterprise market is still always there. You know, if you have a really hot product, you know, at CES, you find a lot of enterprise companies just approaching you. And so to a large degree, it's a low hanging fruit. It seems obvious now, like in hindsight, but, you know, back then it wasn't so obvious. You're starting up with this product, they just kind of hand it to you and they're like, what should we do with it? But now, after helping them build that brand over the course of 2 years, close to 2 years, I guess, they're now, when people talk about mixed reality glasses, they talk about Nreal, Magic Leap, and HoloLens. So it's in that category.
Put them on the map. That's beautiful. That's what you guys do. So how would you, when you talk about brand consulting, when we talk about like startups versus established brand, is it sometimes better to work with startups because startups, you know, don't have the foundation, you kind of have a whole thing to work with and you can kind of dig them from the ground up? Or sometimes when you have an established brand, sometimes you have to redo some stuff. You're like, oh shoot, we got long years of things you did wrong, we got to reestablish that. What's easier to work with?
Oh, huh. You know, like, to be honest, you know, we've worked with companies like, so we have worked with larger companies. Like, there's a, you know, obviously there's the largest, well, actually before TikTok came around, but there's a company called Kuaishou. They're also a live streaming company. They've been around for a while. And then we've also worked with Oppo, which is actually someone we're working with right now as well. They're one of the larger smartphone brands in the world. We've worked with Alibaba as well. And also we do some work with TikTok as well right now. So, I mean, you know, when you deal with the larger companies, frankly speaking, you're just kind of one vendor out of like the several dozens that you're working with. So, and then, you know, it's a lot more complicated because you're kind of working on a really small piece of the bigger picture. And for me personally, you know, it's great. Obviously you're like, you know, you're working with larger brands, but to some degree it's not as fulfilling personally. So, at the same time, startups, a lot of the startups where we work with, you know, they're VC backed, they have great backgrounds, but you know, they're not necessarily marketing minded, or they may be, but they don't really know how to execute. But actually it's a really good problem to have, because when you're starting off from scratch, you're kind of going from nothing. And you can kind of craft their story in a way that, you know, based on your professional experience, would help them stand out without any baggage. You know, when you're dealing with these other larger companies, you know, they're a lot of baggage. You're dealing with the politics of it all as well. And you know, the impact that you have, frankly speaking, is really minimal.
Yeah. And I can understand that, right? With the startup, it's like, you can say, hey, I work with that startup. We've been doing the things for the last 2 years and this is what we built. When you work with a big company, they can go, well, there was seven companies like mine. I was a part of it, but it's like, at what point can you claim, right? Because there's like other people involved and other people doing stuff. So like, not quite the, as you said, fulfilling, I think, with the startup that you can once again put your stamp on and say, hey, that was us. Like, that was 100% us. We did that. Obviously, I think it's a lot more fulfilling. On that note, it's time to wrap up this segment of the Marketing Growth Podcast. Thank you, Francis. It's been a pleasure having you on the podcast. I still have tons of questions about PR and digital communication. We'll talk about them in detail in the next episode. Before I sign off, I want to remind you that you can get in touch with my team at ShaneBarker.com to grow your business via content marketing, SEO, influencer marketing, and social media marketing. All right, then. See you soon with another interesting conversation. Stay tuned to the Marketing Growth Podcast.